And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme in our second hour is shame, blame, and near fame. Each of my guests is discussing one of these topics. My first guest explored the final frontier, women as astronauts. She examined the careers of 13 women who dared to show the right stuff, but who were washed out because of the times. We talked about the near fame experience of these women from her book, Almost Astronauts. My next guest has examined overcoming a toxic emotion. Shame. She describes an emotion that is born out of cultural attitudes that defines some of the groups of people as less than other groups. We'll discuss bringing shame out of the closet. And if you want to ask questions of my guest or join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Anne K. Gross received her doctorate in clinical psychology from Duke University. She has dedicated her career to the treatment of individuals with disabilities and chronic illnesses. Although she now writes full-time, her past professional positions have included assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Colorado Health Services Center and regional consultant for the Social Security Disabilities Program. She has published over a dozen articles in professional psychology journals, as well as essays and editorials in the Denver Post and New Mobility magazine. She and her husband live in Colorado, and they have two daughters. Welcome to the show, Anne. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Well, thank you so much. And you really do shed the light on a subject that few of us think about on a day-to-day basis, and that is shame. But you and I, both as Duke graduates, of course, are feeling the keen shame of the defeat that the Duke basketball team suffered at the hands of Arizona. And I make light of it. I really shouldn't. Shame is an important thing. And you as a therapist, it's natural that you might want to write about shame as a subject. In fact, if you go into any bookstore and you try to find a book on shame, there are very few from which to choose. So you might have written about it because it's also underreported. But it's more than just a clinical examination for you, isn't it? Tell us about your motivation behind writing shame, about shame, and how your personal life influenced your decision to write this.
Sure. Well, the title of my book is The Polio Journals, Lessons for My Mother, and it's about my mother who contracted polio in 1927 at the age of two, leaving her paralyzed from the waist down. And at the time, society viewed polio as something shameful. They thought it reflected the dirty lifestyle of those who contracted it. And as a result, my grandparents did what all of us do when we feel shame. They silenced all issues related to my mother's disability, hoping that would lead to more acceptance. And my mother grew up and lived a very accomplished life. She married, raised two children, was a professional musician. However, before she died in 1985, she poured out her thoughts in a series of journals. And her writings reveal the silent pain and private pain that many of us experience when we feel shame, because she felt a lot of self-hatred and isolation related to her disability.
And that is, of course, what prompted you to write about this subject. Now, most emotions give us very, very specific feelings. Worry, or we have sweaty palms, the racing heart, the anxiety, unhappiness, lack of energy, sometimes even depression. Shame is different just by its very nature. So in what ways is shame different from these other emotions?
That's a good point, Bill. I mean, I think the thing about shame is that it isn't tied to a specific feeling like sadness or lack of energy, and it's not necessarily tied to a specific behavior like guilt. Rather, it permeates the very core of how we feel about ourselves. So although when we feel shame, we may look down and avert our gaze, that what we're shameful about is too shameful to acknowledge. It's kind of like catch-22, you know? So we keep it silent and it's hidden, and we often don't know how to label it or what it is. It's just sort of this generalized feeling of feeling defective or bad in some fundamental way.
Defective or bad, that is certainly the way in which we feel and it manifests itself. But I guess I'm trying to get at one of the other things about shame is that, you know, today if you have depression, it's almost a badge of honor to say that I'm going to therapy or I'm on drugs to help overcome my depression. It's very much out in the open, as opposed to shame. Shame is different just fundamentally by its nature, isn't it, Anne?
That's right. I mean, we're too ashamed to talk about it. And so, like, getting back to my mother, I think her journals reveal that she wanted to talk to people about it, but she was afraid that if she did, that people would find her unacceptable or not, you know, kind of push her away and reject her. And so we keep it silent in part because we feel if people really knew us for who we were, they wouldn't like us and they would reject it. So it's a tough emotion because we then, by keeping it silent, we feel even more isolated and more alone and more like, what's wrong with us that we're feeling this way? So it's a tricky emotion.
Very much so. So it's tied to secrecy. It almost makes us, it's a very social emotion because we're dependent on our perceptions of how others are going to perceive us. So it's very social in that respect. And we're talking to Ann Gross, everybody, who is the author of the book, Shaming, or not the book, but author of the article, Bringing Shame Out of the Closet. And in what ways is shame destructive?
Well, it's destructive because the very nature of shame is by keeping things secret, it really gets in the way of intimacy. Like, for example, if you're trying to keep something from somebody, you can't really be close to them. So, for example, when I was growing up, my mother and I, and this is hard to believe, never once had one discussion about her disability. I mean, I would try and talk, I mean, I have few recollections of trying to talk to her about it, and she would turn the other way and get angry and sort of get this angry look on her face. So I soon learned not to talk about it.
Mm.
So we were really robbed of an opportunity to show compassion for each other. But I think the damage to our family life went beyond that because, and I hear this dynamic in a lot of families that keep secrets, whether it's around alcoholism or other addictions or sexual abuse. We were all, everybody in the family was elicited to sort of keep my mother's paralysis secret, so to speak. So my mother was always asking me to help her do things, and understandably so, and help minimize the impact of her disability. But it was a destructive double message. On the one hand, we weren't supposed to talk about it, but on the other hand, our whole family sort of worked hard to keep it a secret.
And because of your mother's polio paralysis, you experienced, I think what you called in the article, secondhand shame. Mm-hmm. Tell us some of the effects that the secondhand shame had on you, and which ways did that manifest itself for you?
Sure. Well, I remember actually, I grew up in the Los Angeles area, and I remember one Saturday morning, my mother and I went shopping, which was something that I always enjoyed doing with my mother, and once we got into the store, we were looking at the dresses on the racks, and this little girl, about 5 or 6, kind of came up close to my mother and started staring at her, and I felt like exposed, sort of caught for having a mother that was sitting in a wheelchair, and I felt like I wanted to run away. And
how old were you at the time,
I
Ann?
I was 13 at the time, and so I felt the same way. It wasn't until I read her journals after she died that I realized that those feelings that I felt in the store that morning of feeling sort of exposed for having, or flawed for having a mother sit in a wheelchair, was the feelings that she felt every day of her life. And I think those are really common. I think if you take people who have, like I said before, an addiction or alcoholism or some other family secret that they're ashamed of, that everybody feels in the family kind of ashamed about it. And I think that's it's a very destructive dynamic and leads to a lot of private pain that I think all of us who feel shame experience.
Absolutely, it does. We're talking to Ann Gross, and the subject matter is shame. But Ann, you're married now. You have 2 children of your own.
Uh-huh.
When you were married and you brought your then probably fiancé back to meet your parents, what were some of the emotions that you were going through? Did you experience any of this secondhand shame that you write about?
Wow, that's a really good question. I do remember that at our wedding that a lot of people, I kept it a secret to some of the people at the wedding. And I remember that my mother, when she came down the aisle, my father actually pushed her down the aisle in the wedding. And I remember feeling this jolt of shame that I had this mother who sat in a wheelchair. So I think it was really wasn't until I wrote the book, you know, many years after she died, that I was finally able to get rid of some of the shame. And I think the way I was able to do that was to understand that my mother's silence wasn't a choice as much as she needed to keep it her disability silent or not talk about it, because people who were disabled in our society at the time were really outcast.
All right, I see. We're talking to Ann Gross. We're talking about shame and some of the effects that shame and even secondhand shame can have on an individual, can have on a family. Let's spin this a little bit more positively if we can, Ann. And what are some of the ways in which one can lessen the impact that shame has on them?
Well, of course, that's the most important question, Bill. And the good news is despite how awful shame feels, you can take some easy steps to help rid yourself of shame. And I talk about some of this in my book vis-a-vis how our family dealt with it in terms of what would have helped my mother. And the first, and this is not an easy piece of advice to act on, but I can't stress it enough, as difficult as it may be, try not to silence what you're ashamed of. When we feel shame, we feel like we're the only ones who believe or think the way we do. So try and find people like yourself. Like for my mother, she never was around other people with disabilities. And if she had been, that really would have helped her feel less shame. And I think that's one of the main components of the 12-step programs, whether it's for addiction or gambling, is when you're around other people like yourself, nothing melts the shame faster than that.
Well, it's interesting because in some of the suggestions that you have for people, one of them is try to spend more time around other people who are like you, which mm-hmm. is what you just described. But contrary to that, you also have in there try to spend more time around people who are different from you. So how do those two contradictory ideas come together?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I think that one of the things is that I think a lot of people who are around people like my mother, people who aren't disabled, or around people like my mother, they sort of feel her shame as if it was their own, like we talked about before. So if you get to know a lot of people who are different than yourself and you realize that they're kind of that they're like you, then that melts the shame too. So I think it's important to sort of, I wish my mother had been able to move freely between the world of the disabled and the world of the non-disabled. And then she would have felt less shame, and then everybody around her would have.
All right. We're talking to Ann K. Gross, everybody. Bringing shame out of the closet is what we're talking about here. And one of the impacts that you have for lessening shame's impact on yourself is learn what triggers your shame. Now, that's
right.
A hard self-exploration. So how do you suggest that people go about learning what triggers their shame?
Well, that's a really good question, Bill. I mean, I had a friend who whose daughter was gaining weight, and she couldn't tolerate that. And that's one of the trademarks of shame, is that you can't tolerate other people's vulnerabilities or your own. And so I asked my friend, I said to her, what was it like when you were growing up? How did your parents respond around eating? What were the food messages that you got? And lo and behold, whenever she would overeat, her parents would either respond angrily to her or really give her shaming comments like, you know, you look fat or you're fat. And so one of the things to do is to, if you have a situation that you really can't tolerate, which is a trademark of shame, you feel like you either have to withdraw or you get angry, look back in your own childhood, in your own life, and ask yourself, what associations do you have with that experience?
So you really have to confront the personal meaning that you have associated with that shame that you've picked up somewhere along the line.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Now, shame itself, as you pointed out with your term secondhand shame, shame itself really leads to other shame, or as you put it in the article, shame begets shame.
Uh-huh.
So tell me, what can you do to get over some of this feeling that you have about the shamefulness on the subject of shame?
Well, I think for me, I think knowledge is key. Like, I always felt a lot of shame around my mother, and it sort of spiraled into every aspect of our life. Like I just felt in general like I was sort of a defective and flawed individual, And the more I learned about my mother's situation, and the more I understood it from her perspective, the healthier I got in terms of melting my own shame. So I think the most important thing is to, for example, let me give you another example. Let's say there's a family secret around an uncle who was gay in your family. I think what can help you melt the shame around that is to find out as much information as you can about what it was like to be gay when your uncle was growing up or living. And ask your grandparents, for example, how did society view homosexuality at that time? Because a lot of times our shame is embedded in the cultural messages of the time. So the more information you can have, the more it helps you melt your shame.
All right. We're talking to the author Anne K. Gross, who wrote an article, Bringing Shame Out of the Closet, Why It's Past Time to Talk About This Toxic Emotion. Deepak Chopra picked this up and was running it on his website. Anne, what do you want people to take away from reading your article?
Well, from both reading my article and reading my book, The Polio Journals, Lessons from My Mother, there's one important thing I want readers to take away, and that is all of us want to be accepted. That's the most universal desire, I think, of humankind, is to feel accepted and liked and loved by other people. And all of us have certain behaviors or attributes that we fear that if others knew us for who we really are, they wouldn't like us, and so we silence that, we keep it hidden. And what I'd like readers to take away is that silence only makes you feel worse and more isolated, and to try and not silence that, but to be able to talk about it. That's what I'd like readers to take away.
Oh, and that is an important message. We've been talking to Anne K. Gross, everybody, author of the article Bringing Shame Out of the Closet. Anne, this has got to be an intriguing subject for lots of people. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your articles, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, they can go to my website, thepoliojournals.com. And there they can read the prologue to my book. They can also read the article that you talked about. And they can read more about shame and tips for lessening their own shame in their own life.
Oh, that's great. We've been talking to Anne Gross, everybody. Anne, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.